You'll find that in our book, starting on page 258. We have a little box called, "So what about nuclear power?" because somebody always asks that. Well, first of all, less than 3% of U.S. electricity is made from oil. Less than 3% of U.S. oil makes electricity. So the two are almost unrelated, and almost all of that oil, by the way, is the bottom of the barrel, what's called resid, which is kind of tarry goo that it's hard to use for anything else. Something like 0.3 to 0.6% of our oil use is distillate being used to make electricity. So the only connection of any consequence is the indirect one through natural gas, that if you use nuclear, say, to displace natural gas, you could substitute that for oil. Trouble is, most of the gas is used in peaking and nuclear is baseload. Now, the nuclear industry and the federal government are trying very hard to create the illusion that a nuclear revival is going on. I've talked to all the utilities that are allegedly about to order a nuclear plant in the United States and asked them the simple question, how will you finance it? And they simply say, well, we assume the federal government will pay for it. What, you're not going to put up your own capital? No, this is unfinanceable in the private capital market. Why didn't you say so? Oh, blah, 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 blah. Mumble, mumble. So, you know, the nuclear industry ran its last nuclear revival conference. Not a single financier showed up, and it wasn't for lack of trying. This technology has died of an incurable attack of market forces. And if you look at the competition, it's very clear why. Let's stipulate that, say, the MIT study of nuclear economics was right. And let's make sure we properly compare what's called busbar electricity, which is what it costs at the power plant, with retail electricity, where you also have to pay the delivery costs and losses. Well, it turns out that a new nuclear plant will deliver a kilowatt hour at something like 10 to 30 times what it costs to save it, or about 5 or 10 times what it costs to make it with industrial or building-based gas-fired cogen or trigen, or about 2 or 3 times what it costs to make it with a new wind farm. In other words, there are three fatal competitors to new nuclear plants. They are all on the market, they are abundant, they're widely available, they're a lot faster to build, they're relatively uncontroversial. It only takes one fatal competitor to kill nuclear, and it's got three, and then it will have more. It will in due course have cheap fuel cells, cheap photovoltaics, and so on. Maybe other stuff we haven't thought of, but you know, one's enough, we got three. Now, the MIT study didn't bother to mention any of these or analyze any of these, neither did the Chicago study. They just compared new nuclear with new coal and new gas-fired central generation. Well, sorry, wrong competitors. That's not what killed nuclear. Those are equally uneconomic, more or less. They're not quite as bad as nuclear, but getting there. Now, this does not count a further nail in the coffin. If you go to smallestprofitable.org, you'll find my colleagues and I did a 2002 book that was an economist book of the year called Smallest Profitable, The Hidden Economic Benefits of Making Electrical Resources the Right Size. And that showed 207 hidden economic attributes of decentralized power sources that typically increase economic value by about a factor 10. But I didn't count those in the comparison I made a minute ago. That just makes the comparison a whole lot worse for nuclear. There is a lot of nonsense written about new nuclear technologies, typically pebble bed, which, you know, maybe there are some better ways to do, although a lot of very capable outfits in Germany and the U.S. and elsewhere have broken their pick on it for decades. And there's a couple of basic problems with it besides the general problem of nuclear economics. And let me suppose for the sake of argument that it might get, you know, half as expensive as present nuclear plants. Well, that's still way off. the other three competitors. It's nowhere near enough to make up the gap, and you never can do that with either technical or regulatory change. You know, only a small fraction, most people would say around an eighth, of the cost of today's nuclear plants is the nuclear steam supply system. You can make that free and it still won't compete by a wide margin. But the pebble beds also have a couple of really basic issues. The way you can get them cheap is to assume they require no containment. They're still not cheap, by the way, but cheaper. But then you have to postulate that you've got rid of the problem Edward Teller pointed out, and for a change he was right, namely, if there's ever a break in the boundary between the steam and the helium, then the high-pressure steam can go back into the core and make a coal gas reaction with your graphite-coated pebbles and make bad things like hydrogen and carbon monoxide and cause fires and explosions, so you don't want that. All of the high-temperature gas-cooled reactors built so far have had helium leaks. In fact, we had one in my own state of Colorado. It's now a gas-fired power plant. And then the other big problem is proliferation. These reactors would use medium-enriched fuel, which means they're, in terms of separative work, they're something like 84-85% of the way to highly enriched bomb-grade uranium. And in order to have pebble bed reactors in any numbers, you would need an enormous expansion of enrichment capacity, which means you would be spreading all over the place somehow the incentive and usually the implementation to enrich lots of uranium, which is the simplest way to make bombs. And you don't even need to test them. You just slam the stuff together and it works. So that's not, I think, a world any of us want to live in. Fortunately, if we take markets seriously, none of this will happen.